Welcome back to the Physician Syndicate podcast. Today, Ronak is in California. I'm on the East Coast. So Ronak, how you doing?
I'm doing well. But before we get into the business stuff, Greg, one question for you. When are doctors
most calm? Is this like a joke? Is this like a knock-knock joke, Ronak? All right, let's see. When are they most calm?
When they have a lot of patients.
Okay,
we'll stick to business. Segment. We'll stick to business and stay away from the comedy.
All right, so a few news articles that I found interesting this morning and over the weekend that we'll set it up briefly, especially because we've talked about the fintech space a little bit, and it looks like a big bank is getting into a little bit of the healthcare world, even though it says that they've been in the healthcare world, and I got to say, it doesn't look like they actually were, unless I'm missing something big that they've done in the past. So the first news story, the actual article that we're linked to is back from March, but it looks like the acquisition actually went through today. Fifth Third Bank, which is a pretty large bank here in the U.S., they're publicly traded, announced a acquisition of a company called Big Data Healthcare. And what they do is basically do healthcare industry payments. So you can think of them as like a tech-enabled payment processor of healthcare payments, whether that's for hospitals, private practices, whatever it is. And Fifth Third has acquired that company. And within kind of the announcement that was on Business Wire, they talk about how Fifth Third is kind of like a healthcare industry leader within the banking world. But looking at some of their acquisitions that they've actually done, which I'm just going to jump into Crunchbase here. But anyways, looking through Fifth Third's acquisitions, it looks like according to Crunchbase, they've done a total of 12 acquisitions. None of them that I can see have anything to do with healthcare. So interesting that they're focusing on doing something within healthcare. But Ron, what are your initial thoughts? So yeah. Fifth Third Bank, gigantic company, maybe even some physicians have physician loans through them. So they do stuff in healthcare, but this seems a little bit different.
Yeah, so you're right. This is a very large bank. It's not on the size of a scale of a Morgan Stanley or a Bank of America or anything, but it still is a very large bank. So it's not unexpected that they're already doing a lot in the healthcare industry, right? When you're a bank that's this large, you're naturally going to have, like you're saying, physicians as clients. You're going to probably be giving loans to some healthcare companies and hospitals and things like that. So I don't think this is coming completely out of left field. When you look at their acquisitions, they might not have made an acquisition in the healthcare space before, but they've probably been playing in this space, and probably anybody, any bank that this large is going to be playing in this space because the healthcare industry is so large. What I think is really interesting here is that like the banking industry, they make their money on the number of transactions, the amount of money that they manage. They just want to grow their cash pile as much as possible. And I think what we're seeing is that the healthcare industry in general seems to be a little bit on a growth trajectory compared to many of the other industries out there. The healthcare industry is a little bit less cyclical compared to, let's say, the tech industry or the oil and gas industry or whatever it is. So I wouldn't be surprised if the bank is looking at this as a way to just get a little bit deeper into the healthcare ecosystem so that way they can have more money to manage more transactions under their belt, because they probably see that the healthcare industry is probably growing at a faster clip over the next, like, call it 5 to 10 years than many other industries out there.
Yeah, for me, this is probably one of those angles of, hey, we can acquire this company, acquire their book of business, start working with the hospitals or the practices that this big data company already has within their pipeline. Maybe they have some new enterprise deals coming down the pipe, that it's a head start, I guess, really diving into like healthcare payments instead of, I guess, the big thing when you're a big acquiring company is, do you buy or do you build? And this is probably one of those where they're like, hey, we can spend 5 or 10 years competing against a company like this, or we can buy a company, plug our own systems in, supercharge what they're doing, and then just have kind of a head start into growing into healthcare payments themselves. So just thought it was a kind of an interesting story that really ties in a lot about, you know, big banks, a little bit of fintech, but also the healthcare angle. And so the second one is just which healthcare systems are starting to utilize artificial intelligence to ease clinical documentation burdens. So we've talked a lot about some of these products that are out there. So you have Microsoft Epic doing in-basket messages. You have Microsoft's portfolio company, Nuance, doing the new ambient listening technology. I've also reached out to some people high up within Nuance to see if they're willing to come on the show to talk about what they're doing. And then other kind of AI systems. See, San Diego, you have University of Wisconsin and Stanford Healthcare are all partnering with Microsoft and Epic to release that in-basket messaging AI chatbot that we've talked about in the past already. If anybody is listening in those systems that is starting to utilize some of those things, I would love to have you on the podcast to figure out, you know, how well is it going with that introduction into the in-basket messaging. And then you had something that one of our guests previously on the show, Blake Madden, had broke a story about how HCA Healthcare is actually starting to work with Automedics within a couple different of their emergency room settings to use their own AI-enabled version of ambient listening. So you have HCA that's jumping into that world. And then actually a future guest that's coming on the show, Shiv, who's the CEO of Abridge, they recently announced a couple partnerships with two pretty large university systems to also... Abridge, for anybody out there, that's also an ambient listening AI technology. So we'll have him on and hopefully he can demo the actual product and maybe just throw it up on YouTube for people to see. They're working with University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, which is a gigantic medical center in Western PA, as well as the University of Kansas Health System. So a lot of movement, honestly, within the AI space and with a lot of hospitals that are starting to at least test out these products. So Ronak, I mean, just basics. Yeah. What do you think? Where's this going?
Yeah, if you're a large hospital, why wouldn't you reach out to a Microsoft or one of these companies to just at least do a pilot program, a test pilot to see how it is? This is obviously getting very hyped in the news cycle right now. You probably have doctors or medical students that are asking about this. So from a recruiting side, it probably is a good idea. And like also, again, if you're going through a test, you don't need to commit to anything. If all of this stuff goes haywire and like just gets shut down 6 months from now, fine. But I almost think it would be strategically foolish not to go reach out to some of these AI companies and start getting things implemented because you really don't want to get left behind here. Yeah, I think that's it. You just don't want to get left behind here.
And also just to double click, so the size of that University of Kansas Health System partnership with Abridge, it looks like they're going to be rolling out their generative AI technology to more than 140 locations. That's actually a pretty big, either I don't know if it's a pilot or an actual partnership, but that's actually a pretty large number of spaces that they'll actually be in. That's great. We'll have to talk to Shiv about what that actually means and how broad those partnerships are and kind of see where they are.
Whatever AI that's being out there at all of these hospital networks today, they might not be the right ones for, let's say, 6 years from now. But starting to get used to like how these AI transcripting programs work, I think is a good thing to start just get that education and learning for all these hospital administrators, physicians, every that's part of the system. Because I think it's pretty clear that this wave is taking off. So even if things aren't perfect today, the products are going to evolve over time and get more and more robust as time goes on.
So the next kind of news article that I just wanted to talk about quickly was a funding announcement, not for a startup, but for an actual venture capital firm. So Define Ventures has announced a new digital health early stage fund. And they've raised $460 million for that fund. Define is led by Lynn Chu O'Keefe, who's the founder and managing partner at Define. And she basically goes on to say, "We always believe that in difficult times like these, this is when great companies continue to be born, especially in healthcare. The fundamentals have not changed." So that's from a Forbes article that we'll link to in the show notes. I think this goes back to a lot of things that we've talked about, Ronak. Building in the down market like this is a very interesting time, A, to back companies, but also to build companies. And it looks like they are very much doubling down on not just investing into companies, but specifically within digital health and healthcare. So actually, we'll go through some of their portfolio companies just because I've actually heard of a few of them, which means they've done a pretty good job of investing in the past. But just, you know, quick, what do you think? $460 million fund, that's a pretty big fund for early stage.
Yeah, that's a huge fund. You can invest in quite a lot of startups. We've talked a lot about entrepreneurship and angel investing on this podcast. And that really is the main theme here. I really want to just double click on if there are any physicians that are listening that are thinking about building their own company and like really getting into the entrepreneurship game, and you need a little bit help with their first round of funding and getting those introductions, reach out to me and Greg, right? Like we've built some of these partnerships and relationships in the past. There's a lot of money in the healthcare industry right now. So in order to get a startup going, it probably isn't going to be all that difficult as one might imagine.
And we'll just jump through some of their portfolio companies that maybe you've heard of, maybe you haven't. I've definitely heard of quite a few of these. So we have 9AM Health, Cohere Health, Dexcare, Falks, Hims, which I'm sure a lot of people have heard of, MedArrive, Soda Health, Story Health, Tia, quite a few that I've heard of at least. And it's a fairly large number of, you know, digital health companies. So it looks like they've backed about 21 companies thus far. And it looks like their assets under management now with this new raise have hit about $800 million in AUM. So they're definitely a pretty big player within kind of the digital health space, which is great to see that people are investing that much capital. So I'm going to try to have Lynn on if she's willing. I just reached out to her on LinkedIn so we can talk a little bit. What are they looking for? Is this fund really going to be focused on AI within healthcare, or do they have a specific thesis around raising this $460 million? So we'll see if we can get her on. Going to the startup side of things, I just saw on Twitter, came across a story that came out of Fierce Biotech. And there's a company that just came out of Stealth. And it's interesting because they've raised a total of $109 million all while in stealth from a very good group of venture investors as well as corporate VC funds. So what this company, Nido, I'm not sure, Biosciences, raised $109 million to develop new precision medicines for neurological diseases. And they're going to be taking aim specifically at one disease, Kennedy's disease, which is a rare degenerative disorder. And so they raised that $109 million from 5AM Ventures, Abingworth, Bessemer Venture Partners, of course, I've heard of Bessemer, and then as well as Eli Lilly, which is a really interesting one that we can talk about, and Osage University Partners with new investment for their Series B. So they've gone all the way to a Series B in stealth, led by Bioluminescent Ventures, and then previous investors have also doubled down and put more capital into their Series B. So interesting. Honestly, that's a long time to remain.
Yeah, I actually don't like this. I don't like when companies stay in stealth mode for so long. It really makes me question what they actually have. And do they just have some folks there that are really good at the raising money and marketing side of things and just convincing people to give them money? I think product market fit is really important. Like getting your product out there into customers' hand to see how they respond to it and if you can actually make revenue off of it or not. I get if somebody is like trying to build some like completely game-changing things, you have a time machine or something, right? That like keep that in stealth mode and just keep on building. But I think if you're trying to just build a company as opposed to a science project, having the product in the sunshine, in the light of day, where customers can play with it, test it out, see if it's actually worthwhile is really important. I actually would be really hesitant to invest in a company that stayed in stealth mode for so long, because it's almost like, is the hype actually going to meet the reality? You don't know that. And that just feels like a really big risk to me.
Yeah, I'll take the opposite of this one. So with especially a pharmaceutical company, which this is, so it's going to have to go through FDA testing. If they really think that they have a novel drug target that they're going after, and they're doing it because they don't want anybody else to know what they're doing, sure, I get it. But this company, based on Crunchbase, has been around since 2018. So that's a fair number of years. So that's 5 years that they've taken. They've raised a lot of capital. And it looks like they actually started, let's see, Nido 361 small molecule designed to correct transcriptional dysregulation and restore healthy cell function. So again, this is for Kennedy's disease, which is apparently an inherited X-linked disorder causing muscle loss and decline in neuron function. Phase one trials evaluating the asset started in 2022 with a readout anticipated for the coming weeks. So it looks like they've at least done a phase one trial, which for physicians out there basically means they're testing whether or not it's a safe drug to actually take. It doesn't really go into efficacy or anything like that. That'll be for the phase two and the phase three trial versions. And so it took 5 years and $109 million to get through a phase one trial. That tells you a lot about investing into pharma companies, specifically traditional pharma companies, where all they're going to be doing is bringing out drugs. And the other thing to know is that's a really tough business too, because depending on how long it takes to actually get a drug out to market for those with patents, that patent doesn't last very long. So you have to be pretty quick in the game. And actually, there was a company that I've heard recently that does exactly that. They help pharmaceutical companies get drugs out faster, get through the FDA process faster, so they actually have longer in that actual drug where they can make money before somebody else can go make a generic version of that medicine. So I do understand why they would want to stay in stealth if they really think that they have something that nobody else is going to be able to bring out. And I don't know, maybe by doing that, they also didn't need to file a patent yet. And so maybe that window of how long you can capitalize on that specific drug is longer. Maybe that's one of the reasons that they did it. But maybe we can try to reach out to somebody at the company and see if we can have them on and talk about what they're doing.
Yeah, Greg, I think if there is demand for this, at some point we can do an episode on personally your best investments, my best investments, as well as our worst investments. I might be a little bit jaded here, but my best investment was actually like completely in broad daylight. And my worst investment was one that was very secretive for way too long.
The other thing I'll say is like going after a rare disease is a really interesting business model, because they're rare diseases, and that's why a lot of pharmaceutical companies don't go after those kind of disease states, mostly because they're out the total to make money.
Yeah, the total addressable market is small.
And so I'm looking to see if I can find actually how, like, what is the prevalence of Candida's disease? It looks like it's, according to rarediseases.org, we're looking at about 1 in 40,000 people worldwide are affected by it. And treatment is symptomatic and supportive, so there's really nothing. Life expectancy is normal, though a small percentage succumb to the disease in their 60s or 70s due to swallowing complications. All right. So inspiration pneumonia, asphyxiation, okay, because of the bulbar weakness. So it's, I don't know. I don't know if I would, again, putting my venture capital or angel investor hat on, I don't know if this is one that I would, unless they have a huge plan to go after a lot more neurological diseases, because maybe the technology that they're building specifically goes after degenerative disease. But again, I don't know. I don't know the full story behind this company. But to go after a pretty rare condition and betting on that, it's an interesting move, I would say. All right. So we're also going to throw up this this other article that goes into a little bit of TikTok, which if you have not watched the news lately, TikTok is in the news quite a bit, especially with their U.S. CEO coming in front of Congress and testifying to keep TikTok within the U.S., which we can have that conversation later, whether or not we think that's the right thing. But there was a study out of the University of Arizona College of Medicine and presented at the Digestive Disease Week 2023 by a researcher, Macklin Loveland, out of the University of Arizona, which basically was looking at TikTok and misinformation or disinformation specifically within liver health. And so the researchers looked at 2,223 posts with the term cirrhosis and liver disease on TikTok in both October and November of last year. And they found that 883 of those contained misinformation specifically related to kind of these fad diets, specifically saying consuming various mushrooms, eating beef liver, or doing a parasite cleanse would heal the liver, as well as herbal remedies. So I think this is just an interesting story about social media and narratives around specific things, and what is the responsibility of physicians and maybe even just like actual content moderation on some of these large platforms that have gigantic audiences that can go and affect public health at a large scale. I don't know. What are your thoughts on this story? It's kind of an interesting one between a mix of medicine and social media.
Yeah, this is scary, I think. So with AI and all of these deep fakes and being able to recreate people's voices and videos and things like that, I think it's pretty natural to think that this is just going to get expanded over time and become easier and easier to push one's agenda, right? So the fact that this article is all about very specific liver diseases, this is not like a broad brush thing that impacts the general population, but it's so targeted. That just tells me that this fake news is getting into more and more specific niches. And again, once you have technology that you can start putting these famous doctors and making fake video clips of them talking about a very specific rare disease and saying that, oh, if you buy this product or that product, then it'll save you. And there's no scientific evidence behind this, is scary. And most people don't have the time and energy to go and look up all of the studies behind a product or seeing what's correct and what's not. They have to rely on the professionals. And I think especially for the physicians out there, this is where like I look at the physicians as being a very important part of society, like being able to go and talk to a doctor in person. You know that there's no third party in the middle there or anything that's trying to like bias you other than just trying to get as healthy as possible. So I do think that a lot of regulation is needed here. This is a worrying trend in my opinion. Nobody really knows what the truth is about anything anymore. Like Greg, I'm not a physician. I'm still very confused on if drinking a glass of milk is healthy for me or not. On one side, I hear about
the
all
dairy
the calcium
industry,
and the protein.
Big dairy industry.
Exactly. I don't know what to do.
Actually, and, a follow-up question yeah. for you. Given your role within Meta, okay. and I'm yeah. sure you saw these types of lawsuits come through.
Yeah.
Is the social media platform, are they potentially at risk of a lawsuit given, let's say somebody watched one of these TikToks or something and died from one of the things that they ended up eating or whatever they did for that fad diet?
Yeah.
Is TikTok potentially liable for some of this stuff, or how does that work in terms of
yeah.
content moderation? Given that I'm sure TikTok has some kind of content moderation, which does that throw them into like technically a publisher, or
yeah.
how does that work?
So Section 230 came up many years ago. And what this basically does is protect the internet companies from being media companies. So basically whatever is said on a Facebook or a TikTok or things like that, they're not responsible for the impacts of it. They do have to comply with things like terrorism or money laundering and things like that they absolutely have to comply to. But things like fake news, saying that, hey, if you eat 3 pounds of cheese per day, you're not going to gain any weight, they're not going to be liable for anything like that. And this, I think, comes back to the regulatory side of things, that at some point, I think the government does need to focus on this a little bit further and get some regulations in place, because I don't really understand what the difference between a TikTok and a CNN news channel is, right? Like, why is one supposedly held to a significantly higher regulatory standard than the other? These are largely the same things, in my opinion.
Also, probably TikTok has a lot more engagement than CNN or any of these mm-hmm. other channels have, which is interesting. One other kind of line that we'll throw out there from this, again, this is from Fierce Pharma that we're putting up, and then we'll link to the actual study as well. Encouragingly, the study found that the inaccurate posts had far less engagement than accurate posts, with the misleading posts getting an average of 1,671 likes and 140 shares, compared to an average 14,463 likes and 364 shares on accurate posts. So I don't know if that's like the TikTok algorithm that can figure out, is this misinformation or not? Don't necessarily take it down, but maybe they limited how viral some of those things can go, which I'm assuming in today's world, you can do that with the algorithms out there.
Probably, but I think that this stuff is going to get more and more difficult as time goes on, right? Whatever misinformation there is, you can dress that up in more and more complex and technologically sophisticated ways as time goes on. So even if like posts are getting less engagement today, I wouldn't just automatically bet on that 5 years from now.
All right. That was a quick news roundtable with Ronak and I on the Physician Syndicate podcast. We'll see you next time. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. As always, we'd like to remind you that the information and opinions expressed on this podcast are for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be construed as financial or investment advice. Before making any investment decisions, we strongly recommend that you consult with your lawyer, tax professional, and financial planner. Keep in mind that investing in startups can be extremely risky, and there's a potential for loss of your entire investment. Remember to always conduct thorough research and consider your risk tolerance before making any financial decisions. Stay informed, and we look forward to having you join us on our next episode of the Physician Syndicate podcast.